in charge.
The 10 plagues that we have in this week's portion and in next week's portion correspond to the 10 statements of creation. Each plague reveals a truth about creation. So, for example, God said on the first day of creation, "Let there be light," and there was light. The 9th plague was the plague of darkness, where God showed He's in charge of light and the opposite of light. God said, "Let there be a barrier dividing the waters above from the waters below." God sent the plague of the locusts, which cover the heavens, and there's no longer a barrier between that which is above the heavens and that which is below, that which crawls on the ground. The locusts crawl, but they also fly. There's no longer a barrier between the heavens above and the earth below. God said, "Let the waters gather, and let there be dry land." He worked with the waters in creation. God sends a plague to turn the water into blood. Each of the plagues corresponds to one of the statements of creation. Because the same way there were 10 statements of creation, what that means is 10 statements of creation are 10 windows through which we can find God in this world. And mankind, through its sins, were clouding these windows. First from Adam till Noah, 10 generations. Then from Noah till Abraham, another 10 generations. Finally, when it's time to take the Jews out of Egypt, God Himself is uncovering these windows. And God Himself is showing that He's in charge in each of these realms of creation. So that when we leave Egypt 50 days later, we can get 10 commandments. The 10 commandments are again these 10 windows, these 10 perspectives of finding God, these 10 revelations of the divine. Not so much of the divine, the revelations of the divine, the 10 limited lights of divinity are revealed in the 10 commandments. Each of the commandments corresponds to one of the plagues, which corresponds to one of the statements of creation. So now we can understand why the number 10 is so significant. Why is it that a minyan needs 10? Why is it that whenever 10 Jews gather, the Almighty's presence is found? Why is it that whenever we take the Torah scroll out of the ark, 10 verses should be read? Because all of these 10s are echoes and revelations of the 10 spherot, the 10 statements of creation, 10 windows through which we can find God. Thank you very much. But if we think about it, in this week's portion, we only have 7 plagues. In next week's portion, we have 3 plagues. So the Kabbalists teach that in this pattern of the 10 statements of creation, there's actually a divide. There are 3 and then 7. For example, if we look in Genesis, the Talmud asks that in the first chapter of Genesis, we only have 9 statements. And the Talmud answers that the very first word, "in the beginning," implies that there was a statement before that. So there is a hidden statement in the beginning. And then the second statement the Talmud says is, "and God said, let there be light." The third statement is, "God said, let there be a barrier dividing the waters above from the waters below." The first statement is the hidden statement, the one that's before the words "in the beginning." The second statement is, "and God said, let there be light." The light of day one of creation, our commentaries say, was not a physical light because the sun and the moon are only created on day 4. The light of day one of creation is a spiritual light which is so rarefied and so special that it's hidden away for the righteous and it no longer is found in this world. It's the hidden light. The third statement of creation is, "let there be a barrier dividing the waters above from the waters below." What are the waters above? Rashi says the same distance that exists between the heavens and the waters below, 500 miles. That's the distance that exists between the heavens and the waters above. If you travel with a spaceship 500 miles past the horizon, will you hit water? No. So what does Rashi mean when he says this? The waters above really means the spiritual realm. If there's a divide between the spiritual realm and the physical realm. Why is it that when a person is sad, a person cries? Because tears are water. And the first great sadness of creation is the divide between the waters below, the physical waters, and the waters above, spiritual waters. The divide between the physical and the spiritual, that's the first great divide in creation. And so whenever we're sad, whenever we're crying based on a division, we cry tears of water. Water is the expression of that. So the first three statements really are all about heavenly matters. In the beginning, it's a statement really that's so high, it doesn't even have words. Let there be light is a spiritual light that was hidden away for the righteous. And the divide between the waters above and the waters below is a divide between the spiritual realm and the physical realm. It's only from the fourth statement and on that the matters of earth are dealt with. Fourth statement, let the waters gather and there'll be dry land. So from statement number 4 through statement number 10, the last 7 statements are the statements that deal with the earthly realm. Statements 1, 2, and 3 are statements that deal with the heavenly realm. And so too within the human being. The human being contains within himself and within herself echoes of each of these statements of creation, revelations of each of these great divine lights. So the human being, there's a divide between the 3 and the 7. The first three sefirot, when they come down into the human being and find expression within the human being, are expressed in the intellect. 3 levels of mind. The lower 7 sefirot are expressed within the human being as levels of emotions, as levels of feelings. So the Kabbalists say that the mind has 3 parts. And the emotions, the heart, has 7 parts. 3 statements and 7 statements. And that's why in this week's portion there are 7 plagues. 7 plagues to correspond to the 7 lower sefirot, to the 7 statements of creation, statements 4 through 10. In next week's portion, we have 3 plagues, Parshat Bo. Parshat Bo, there are 3 plagues to correspond to the first three statements. The statements that deal with the heavenly realm, that's already in next week's portion, Parshat Bo. Yeah, question.
Isn't there also a line of thought that says that the first 9 plagues come in sets of 3 to each teach a different lesson?
Yeah.
3 lessons?
Sure, yeah, that's also true. It's another true point. This is just another way of dividing them. 7 and 3. And so here we have an amazing thing. The Kabbalists are telling us that the number 7 is the number of the emotions. 7 emotions. Number 3 is the number of intellect, intellectual stages. We live in a world that's filled with sevens. 7 days to the week, 7 notes in the musical scale. There are 7 great shepherds of the Jewish people: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Aaron, Joseph, and David. Apparently, our world is primarily to be a world where we need to fix our emotions. True levels of godly intellect is beyond our world. The level of intellect that we have in our world is really an echo of a higher world that comes into our world. But the primary, as it were, objective and mission that we have in this world is to fix our emotions. To fix the 7 lower emotions. The emotions, the 7 lower spheres. And so when we've been learning in this class about kindness, about giving, then about restraint, the opposite of giving, holding back, these are really emotions. The first of the 7 lower spheros is called chesed. Chesed is giving, it's loving, spreading out. The second of the spheros of the emotions is called gvura, strength, restraint, holding in. The opposite of spreading out is holding in. So we learned the greatness of spreading out. We learned about how freedom of choice is connected to chesed. And then we learned about gvura, about holding in, pulling in. How awareness of God's control is a form of pulling in. We learned about how pulling away from anger, pulling away from getting upset, is a form of holding in. We learned about the great blessings that we get when we hold in. These are two of the emotions. Talk about the shepherds of the Jewish people. Abraham was the shepherd who taught us about loving, about giving. Abraham was the great giver, the person of kindness. And Isaac was the shepherd who taught us about holding in, about pulling back, pulling in. Isaac's greatness was that he was placed on the altar and he pulled in and he wouldn't protest. He pulled himself in. So the third great shepherd was Jacob. The attribute of Jacob, the emotion of Jacob, it's not the emotion only of giving. It's not the emotion only of holding in. It's called the emotion of Tiferet. Tiferet is harmony, balance, glory, transcendence. It's a certain special emotion that a person feels when we experience beauty. When a person sees, remember once I visited a donor to Yeshiva University who had donated the graduate program that I was in. The donor lived on a penthouse on Fifth Avenue. I went to the donor's home and the donor opened up his curtains and he said, "Wow, you know, sometimes I come home at night, I look out at all of Central Park, you know, 21st floor on Fifth Avenue and 64th Street. You look out on all of Central Park." The donor said, "It does something to my soul. I look out and I see all the trees and the grass and the flowers. It does something to my soul." What is that? What is it doing? What it's doing is it's triggering and arousing the feelings of Tiferet, the feelings of beauty and harmony. There's a feeling of loving, of giving. It's when I extend myself, when I spread out, when I do for others, when I'm an independent source, as we've learned. There's a feeling of pulling in, pulling away from what I should pull away from. That's a holy feeling also. It's also a holy feeling of beauty, seeing tremendous harmony, seeing the beauty of the world, sitting down and listening to a symphony, and each different set of instruments hitting their notes, and everything is just, wow, it fits in, everything is in its place, everything is balancing everything else out. That sense of transcendence, of harmony, of balance, very special sense of appreciation of art and of beauty, that's Tiferes. And that's the nature of Yaakov Avinu. The nature of our patriarch Jacob is that Jacob is the attribute of balancing both the giving of Abraham and the restraint of Isaac. Balancing the giving of the kindness together with its opposite, together with the restraint of Isaac. And here we have a tremendous, tremendous lesson. Every Jewish home has the challenge of trying to be the home of Jacob. The challenge of a Jewish home is to get to a point where there is a harmony within the home, where the husband and the wife together merge to create a balance. Because the Kabbalists say that while every person has within himself and herself all of these emotions, men, as a generalization, are more of the spreading out type. And women are more of the pulling in type. Men spread out, try to conquer the world, as a generalization. Women pull in and know how to build a home and raise children and create holiness within the home. A marriage is ideally where there is a balance between the husband and the wife, where she checks his enthusiasm and he elicits and draws her out from her cocoon, where she balances his spreading out and he balances her pulling in. So verse Kitif Eret Adam Lashavet Bayit. Like the harmony of man, so it is to settle a home. Yeah, question.
Okay. So today, where we have women that work till maybe 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, and can't always be in the home to be able to help their husband in that way. So how does that, where can you create a balance if a woman is working?
I think that there's certain basic truths of human nature. Even if a person has a particular occupation and time commitments, these truths of human nature are still there. So there may be women, in fact, who are CEOs, presidents, and secretaries of state. And even so, though, within the home, to play the role of the person who grounds the home, sets the limits, that's very healthy. It's a healthy role for a woman. I think that practically, in today's day and age, many women have many, many obligations, and women are very, very involved and very, very accomplished. But still, to be the guide of her children, to set the limits of the home, to build the walls of the home and the boundaries of the home, I don't think that's something that a woman should give up. She could be the CEO. So she comes home at 9 o'clock at night. When she comes home, she sets the rules. She says, okay, you know, certain things are not going to be in this house. That's her job. But besides her job, she has an even bigger job, and that job is to provide that type of balance in the home. You know, if as a generalization again, but typically, if you have a situation where a father is in the house trying to raise the kids, he'll probably order dinner every single night. The house will probably be a little bit of a mess. It's important that there be a woman in the home to set the standards of the home. She might be working when she comes home, though. That's when she sets the standards. But she still has that role. That's a role that I would beg her not to give up. It's something very, very true to who she is and what, and the way God made her. God made man different than the way he made woman. And a woman shouldn't give up the special role that she has. So here's an amazing thought that the Hasidic teachers teach. We find a very, very unusual section in the Torah. As we know, Abraham didn't have children. And his name was Avram. And God comes to Avram and God tells him, I'm going to change your name from Avram to Avraham when you circumcise yourself. And you'll have a child from Sarah, and you'll name that child Yitzchak. Avraham laughs, and Avraham then circumcises himself. 3 days later, he's sitting at the entrance of his tent, recovering from his circumcision. And then we have the story where there are suddenly angels that appear in the guise of humans. Abraham runs out to welcome these angels as guests. One of them turns and says, "Where is Sarah?" Abraham says, "She's in the tent." The angel says, "Let her know that in a year's time I'm returning. I'm coming for the bris, I'm coming for the circumcision, I'm coming for the birthday party. She's going to have a son." Sarah's standing behind the door, and she laughs in disbelief. God then comes to Abraham. Why did Sarah laugh? Abraham confronts Sarah. Why did you laugh? Sarah says, "I didn't laugh." And Abraham says, "No, you did." It's the end of the story.
He has the last word? What kind of story is this?
Well, it's a very difficult. It's a very difficult story. It's a very difficult story. As Michal asked, it's very difficult to imagine that Abraham is given the last word. But on another level, what's so difficult is God just told Abraham that he's going to have a son, Isaac. 3 days ago, before the circumcision. That's why his name was changed from Avram to Abraham. Did he not tell Sarah? And if he didn't tell Sarah, why didn't he tell Sarah? If he did tell Sarah, why is it so unbelievable when the angel says, "You're going to have a child in a year's time"? There's a great Hasidic Rebbe who I happen to have a very special affinity for. And I later found out that I was born on his yard site, so maybe that's why I feel this connection to him. His name is the Shemi Shmuel, by Shmuel Bornstein. He said, the answer is what we're learning. To build a home, there's always a need for balance. Balance and harmony is achieved by the opposite attribute. So if we'll say that men are the attribute of spreading out, in order to achieve the harmony of a home, there's a need for a wife that's going to provide limits, that's going to withdraw and pull in. Let's look at Abraham and Sarah. Abraham is a person who's always spreading out. Mr. Giving, Mr. Kindness, the person who lives to give, who wants to have guests, who just wants to give away whatever he has. Sarah's very tough. Sarah's not the same way. When Sarah's upset with Hagar, she gives Hagar a very hard time. When Sarah's sees that her son Isaac is being influenced negatively by Abraham's son Ishmael, Sarah says to Abraham, "Get rid of this woman and get rid of her son." And Abraham says, "I don't want to do it." God says, "Listen to Sarah. Whatever she tells you, listen to her." That's not a personality of giving. That's a personality of pulling in, of setting boundaries, of restraint, of limits. Sarah is a personality, let us say, of strength, of restraint. And Abraham is a personality of kindness and giving. Sarah balances Abraham. Abraham balances Sarah. And so Abraham, whose personality is one of all giving, of all kindness, of all sharing, when is he told that he's going to have a family? When is he told that he's going to have a child? When he's given a command which is the opposite of giving. What is the command that Abraham is given? He's given the command of circumcision. The command of circumcision is not just to do a certain act of cutting a piece of skin. The command of circumcision really is to have the strength to pull away from the desires that are represented by that part of the body. It's to have the power of pulling away, the power of Ezehu Gibor, who is strong, Akoveshet Yitzro, the person who conquers his urges. So when Abraham is given the command of circumcision, when he's given a command of restraint, of pulling in, he's told he's going to have a son. Now, what was Sarah's nature? She's not a person of giving. What's her nature?
Restraint.
So when is she told she's going to have a son? When she's engaged in the act of welcoming guests. Because when she's welcoming guests, she's engaged in an act of giving. When she's in an act of giving and generosity, that's when she is balanced. And when she is balanced, that's when she can have a child. So we've learned, let us say, three different levels. We spent several weeks talking about the level of giving, of kindness, of being giving people. We spent several weeks talking about the level of restraint, of holding back. And now we've learned another truth, that it's necessary to temper each positive attribute with its opposite to get at a level which is balanced. To get to the place which is balanced, I need to temper giving with holding back. I need to temper holding back with giving. Abraham needs a Sarah, Sarah needs an Abraham. So this is why God revealed to Abraham that he would have a child in the context of Abraham's circumcision. Because when Abraham is doing the act of circumcision, Abraham is balancing himself. Then he can hear that he's going to have a child. And Abraham won't tell Sarah, because Sarah's not yet balanced. But when Sarah is in the middle of welcoming guests, when the woman of strength, the Eish et Chayil, the woman of valor that we learned about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the woman of valor who's the woman of strength, who knows how to pull away, to pull away from that which has to be pulled away from. When Sarah's engaged in an act of spreading out and giving, when she's balancing her restraint with the kindness of welcoming guests, that's when Sarah's told that she's going to have a child, Yitzchak. Because to build a home, there's always a need for a balance. The truth is, Jewish thought teaches that this concept of balance, moderation, of harmony, that is, in almost all situations, the right path to take. The Kabbalists teach that the different statements of creation, the different sfirot, are represented by different colors. There's a book that was written by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan called Meditation in Kabbalah. And in it he has a whole chart of different meditations to meditate on different colors based on the different sfirot. The attribute of giving, the emotion of generosity, is represented by the color white. So for example, milk is white. Because what is milk? Milk is really a concretization of the love that a mother feels for her child. So it's giving. It's loving. The attribute of restraint, of holding back, it's represented by the color red. Color red is the color of judgment, of holding back, pulling back. Maybe that's why in the United States a stop sign is red. The red light is the sign to stop. Sign of restraint, sign of stopping. Color of Yaakov, the color of Jacob, the color of balance, of harmony, is the color green. Green is the color of balance, according to the Kabbalah. Look around the world. The natural color of the world, the color that fills the world, is green. Because the whole world is teaching us, again and again, whenever I look at a tree, whenever I see a blade of grass, it's a message to me saying, balance. Be a person who's balanced. Don't be a person of extremes. Be a person of balance. Be a person of moderation. Maimonides writes that there are laws of deot, laws of emotions, of certain basic feelings. And Maimonides says the right path that a person should take is the middle of the road. Not to go to extremes. Extremes are usually bad. Radical extremes are usually bad. You should look for moderation. The Rambam says, as an example, there might be a person who's extremely emotional. It's not good. It's not healthy. A person who's extremely emotional gets angry at everything. Gets so upset, you can't live with the person. He's always throwing a fit. He's always upset. On the other hand, a person who has no emotions, is detached, is distant, is cold, it's also not good. Doesn't feel the things he should feel, doesn't get angry at the things that deserve anger against them. So Rambam says the right path is the middle path. In the middle. Take the path of moderation. Get upset at the things that we should get upset about, but not upset about the things we shouldn't get upset about. Should be in the middle. The Rambam says, what happens if I find that I'm not in the middle? I'm not in the state which is the middle. I'm not in the balanced place. So the Rambam says I have to then go to the extreme. If I see, for example, that I'm a stingy person, I don't give to others the way I should. To change myself, I need to go to the opposite extreme. I need to give and give and give, give way beyond the mandates. And then, after I've really gone to that other end, I can swing back and get to the middle. In order to fix myself from one extreme, as it were, from one side, I need to counterbalance it with the other side so that the pendulum swings to the middle to get to the right place. The Maharal of Prague says that this lesson, the importance of being a balanced person, is taught to us in the fact that all of our holidays are in pleasant seasons. Passover is in spring. Sukkot is in autumn. When you get to the real heart of summer, Av, Tammuz, it's fast days. When you get to the real heart of winter, Tevet, we're in now, you don't have holidays. You have Hanukkah is the exception. But the biblical holidays are all in pleasant seasons. And the biblical holidays are typically in the middle of the month. Passover is in the middle of the month. Sukkot is in the middle of the month. To teach us moderation. To teach us to be people who are balanced. People in the middle. Not to be people of the extremes. People who are balanced. And the way we achieve balance is by taking the opposite approach. So I think that this is something we can all think about. Maybe one person is very giving. But because a person's very giving, a person doesn't know how to set limits, doesn't know how to set boundaries. But try to meet up with a friend who has the strength of setting boundaries. That friend who has the ability to set boundaries will help create that sense of balance. Someone else is very rigid, very tough, very strong, doesn't have the giving, doesn't have the generosity. So look for a friend who has the generosity and giving to balance the toughness. Because really the ideal is to get to the state of balance, to get to a state of harmony. Harmony is achieved when there is a counterbalancing. So when an Abraham is married to a Sarah, when an Abraham who's all giving is doing an act of circumcision, he's balanced. When Sarah, who's all strength, is doing an act of welcoming guests, she's balanced. We need to look to find balance. We find that balance by adding the element that's really the opposite of our element, the opposite extreme. This might be another meaning of the famous verse. When Adam was created, Adam was unhappy. He was alone. So God said that I will make for Adam Ezer Kinegdo. Literally it means a helpmate who will stand opposite him. Everyone asks, well, a helper is not opposite me. A helper is holding my hand and working together with me. So what does it mean? A helpmate who stands opposite him. So So Rashi says, if a person merits, then it's a good family and a good home, and they're helping each other. And if heaven forbid we don't merit, so then husband and wife are opposite each other, they're fighting each other. That's what Rashi says. But there might be another meaning. The way he helps her, and the way she helps him, is by being opposite him and him opposite her. They help each other by balancing each other. That she might be a person of great strength, and he opens her up. He might be a person who's too open, and she creates boundaries. By being opposite him, that's how she helps him. She helps him by opposing him. She helps him by balancing and getting to this point of equilibrium. May we all merit to achieve balance in our lives, in our relationships, in all of our endeavors.
Amen. This is very good speech.
Oh, thank you.